We do it every day at 4 o'clock here with Bob, Dave, and more, bringing the Professor John Clayton for a conversation. Hello, John.
Hey, guys.
How are you?
Hanging in there. Good, good, good.
Good, good. All right. Are you excited for this game Sunday? Do you feel like you've got some confidence in terms of what you think is going to happen? Or do you look at this and go, man, the Seahawks and the Rams have always had a weird rivalry, even when the Rams have been bad. They're always capable of winning. How do you feel about it going
It's amazing to think that what was – because you go back to October 3rd, and at that time, you know, Rams are coming to town. Seahawks are trying to prove that they can compete and maybe challenge the Rams for the division. And now you talk about a complete turnaround. And the turnaround is such that, you know, here they go down to the Rams, and they could knock the Rams out of the division race. And it's like, you know, the Rams are now trying to prove themselves that they can be worthy of, you know, taking on the 49ers and the Seahawks. And so you talk about a great turnaround that you would never expect. And it's just amazing what a difference 2 months can make.
All right, let's just review again, John. How many years are they going without a first-round draft choice?
They got 2 more years, so that'll be a total of 5 years without a first-round pick.
Mm. 5 years.
Five years.
If, you know, everybody's looking at the Rams and, you know, that they went all in for this window, I mean, is it starting to look like...
They still have to sign Jalen Ramsey.
They're blowing it.
It's not that they're blowing it, but I think what it comes down to is that, you know, the playoff window is still there, but the Super Bowl window may be closing, because not only do they have no first round picks in the next two drafts, they only have about 12 picks total, because, you know, they made the trade for Ramsey and they did this, they did that. And so now, I mean, they're really struggling to figure out, okay, which direction do you go? Because, you know, one of the things that they were so good at doing is that, just like Seattle, they always had about, you know, 8 to 10 draft picks, and so they can maneuver and do different things. But now they're so thin on draft picks that they're at a real tough juncture. And of course, you know, they got Todd Gurley at $14.5 million and Jared Goff at $34 million. They've got to try to figure out what they're going to do with Ramsey, and you know they're going to try to sign him. You know, they got a big salary on Aaron Donald. There's a lot of things that's going to be going on here to see if they can just survive.
Now, where are we with Gurley's contract? Kind of review there. He signed, was it a 4-year deal?
I think it was a 4-year deal at about 58, something like that.
Almost 15 a year, right?
14 and a half.
And so he's in the second year of that?
Yes.
Okay, so do you think they go to him if he doesn't perform and say, hey, we're going to have to, you know, either cut you or have you reduce your salary?
You know what the answer is going to be. He's not going to do it.
Right.
And so it's like, you know, they have to look at the guarantees and see if they, you know, do have to cut him or not cut him.
Wow.
It's amazing to think, you know, just how things change. And I mean, it's clear now that Todd Gurley's just not the same back. Arthritic knee, offensive line, schemes that now stop him. I mean, now it's and again, it's like they can't even get him on the field for the most part. Now, he's in a good stretch now. He had 25 carries 3 weeks ago against Chicago, only 8 the previous week, and then 19 last week against Arizona, and he's had 290-plus yard games. But to think about, you have a $14.5 million back, and he's not had a 100-yard game yet. That's remarkable.
Well, speaking of remarkable, John, Clay Matthews, he's had 8 sacks this year at the age of 33, and didn't he break his jaw in the
Seattle game? Yeah.
So he's what's going on with him? Boy, he's having a great season.
No, I mean, Wade Phillips loves having him out there because, you know, he's got the experience. And say what you want, again, sometimes it's not good to get older. We're not talking about ourselves or anything like that, but to get older in your roster and, you know, to get Eric Weddle, who's played well, and Clay Matthews, the time he's played fantastic. That's helped out. And so, you know, and it's funny because, you know, defensively, you know, they're kind of like middle of the pack and not looking real good, but a lot of it's because of the offense. I mean, they're like in the top 5 or 6 for like yards per carry stopping, I mean, as far as not, you know, fewest allowed, yards per pass, all those different things. But because the offense has been doing so poorly, the defense is on the field so much.
It looks like perhaps Kendricks won't be able to go in this game, which Pete said in that case they'd go more nickel. How much of an advantage does that provide for the Rams, if any at all, in your mind?
Well, it's a different thing because you're taking a great player off the field, Michael Kendricks, but you talk about timing, and my guess would be that if they really needed him, and of course you want to need him for an important game like this, you know, you can say, okay, let's put him out there, but let's not gamble. You need him more in the long run. And so this is a game now where they can have Akeem King, they can have Ugo Amadi. You know, those two guys go out there because you know the Rams, that's a three-receiver team. They're going to be in three-receiver sets 95 to 96% of the time. And so it's probably better to match up with cornerbacks. And so that's one where, you know, the timing is such that it's like, okay, because particularly, you know, you came off two games right now where they played Philadelphia, they played Minnesota, that are primarily two tight end offenses. Now you come back, and this is kind of a little bit of a break, and then you have Cody Barton that you can use if you still want to go with the three linebacker set, and Cody's got good coverage ability and is a good player. And again, he'd be starting on any other team except this one because they got three linebackers.
Yeah, and you know, last time they played him, it indicates that Cody would still get a fair amount of snaps because Kendricks was on the field 53% of the time, which is pretty low. I mean, that's probably the lowest percentage that he's played. The last time they played the Rams, that is. And and then Jamar Taylor was 47%. So there you go. So it really, when you think about it, it's a great way to get Barton. I mean, you obviously don't want Kendricks hurt because he gets one more sack. He's his career high with four. He's playing really well. But, you know, this is a game where he's not going to play as much as he usually does. And you know, Cody won't be overwhelmed with the number of snaps and get a chance to see the kid get some experience out there.
Which is not a bad
thing. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, and again, it's like, you know, they're flexible enough, and now it's a matter, you know, because what the key for this team is, you know, setting the edge. Setting the edge to make sure that they can't get the outside zone reads and zone runs and all that stuff going. Try to take away the running game, and if they can do that, then it puts it in Jared Goff's hand, and he's clearly, when it's in his hands, he's not the best.
All right, what do you read out of what Pete said? This is just from you know, a little bit of a sort of paraphrasing by Nasichobe. He sent us an email about Clowney and Ansa both practiced today. We feel good about it, but is what Pete said, but we need to check them out on game day. That sounds to me like they're going to be playing.
Sounds to me like they are, yeah. I mean, yeah. It does sound encouraging, and because, again, they've been practicing, and you know, let's put it this way, you know Clowney's going to play. He already has fought through it so far and survived last week, and he's taken it on a play-by-play basis. So you know he's going to be out there, yeah. And now it's just a matter of, in warm-ups, just checking out to see how that neck is with the stinger, and if that's the case, Ziggy's going to play. And now what you wonder about with Ziggy, okay, with that stinger, is that going to take away some of his strength? Because, again, you know he's now in the high 250s as opposed to the 270s, and that affected his play early because he wasn't able to get the upfield rush. He was able to go ahead and make plays sideline to sideline and do a good job like that. But now, is he going to be strong enough with that stinger to be able to beat the offensive linemen and the tackles?
Hey, John, the Rams have so many great receivers with Cooper Kupp, Robert Woods, Brandon Cooks, but how much will it hurt him to have the tight end out? Gerald Everett has been listed as he's out of this game, and he had seven catches for 136 yards here in Seattle, so I would imagine it would affect them some, although Tyler Higbee, he's a good one, too.
Yeah, he is. And you notice in that game, because, you know, Sean McVay's still floundering around trying to figure out what to do with this offense, they actually tried a little bit more two tight end sets in that game. And so, it's going to hurt because, I mean, anytime you take away a weapon and one that did so well in the first game against Seattle, that's not going to be easy. But, hey, you just got to try to manage it. And, this is desperation time right now for the Rams. You know, they lose this one. They're out of the division race. They're on the borderline of getting knocked out within a week or so for the playoffs. And so they're going to put everything into it. And, McVay's going to be coaching like crazy.
Yeah, and to your point, Jim, Gerald Everett played 58 snaps last time they played, 81%, and then Higbee was 56%. So, yeah, we did see a lot of two tight end sets last time they played.
John, if you had to guess, and you're pretty good at this, Professor, Jared Goff, what will his numbers be on Sunday?
If they stop the run, then, and I think they can. And again, I can't guarantee it because, again, it's fun. When you look at this game where, again, you go back to October 3rd and this was a test to see where the Seahawks are. And now all of a sudden at 10-2, this is a trap game. You think about this because it's like, okay, don't let down. You got to beat the Rams, and what a difference 2 months makes. But I'd have to say, you know, it's probably going to be 22 of 39 for about 240 yards.
A trap.
You're running that game. Okay, so it looks like we're gonna have to bring Mora in to.
It's a trap game. I agree with you, Professor.
We got two against
possible letdowns.
Bob and
here.
I don't believe in the trap game.
I'm a tiebreaker.
Clayton and Mora say that the trap game is a thing. Tiebreaker. Mora Dooley.
Okay, so I have a stipulation. I think it's a thing, but I think it's a team for or it's a thing for teams that aren't good, like the Browns, a team that doesn't have discipline. I think they can look past someone.
Okay.
But the idea, John.
I think the Seahawks are too disciplined.
You're talking
for that.
About teams that are coached by hillbillies.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. John, we'll give you that. Any team that's coached by a hillbilly.
Of which Pete Carroll is not.
Jim Moore. Yeah.
But, John, the idea that the Seahawks would somehow, some way, with four games left in the season, considering the playoff jostling that's going on, where they're at now, where they could be with a win or a loss, and it's a division rival. The idea that they would be a letdown, that they'd look past the Rams at all, to me, is nonsense.
Well, yeah, but also you think about the idea, because, I mean, you know what it's going to be like taking calls and doing things on Monday if indeed they lose on Sunday night. Oh, this team, something's wrong with this team. I mean, again, you know, to think that, you know, where everybody's thinking right now is that you can, you know, not look past anybody because this is a division rival. You're right. They play well against each other. But, I mean, at some point, I mean, you know, in the last four games, you almost have to figure there's going to be a loss somewhere. And yeah. This is the one place where there can be a loss.
And I agree with that. And I'm not saying they can't lose to the Rams. I'm not saying that at all. All I'm saying is if they do lose, there's not going to be any part of me going, well, they looked past this team. That's why they lost.
Or the team, like, oh, man, you know what? We really looked past the Rams.
No. But how about, John, flip it around, though, and these guys aren't buying this from me either, but the Rams are the more desperate team.
Oh,
they need to win a lot more than the Seahawks do in this game. Dave always cringes when I say stuff like that, and I like repeating
I couldn't
myself.
Agree more. I mean, it's 100% because of
I'm cringing at you, Clayton.
That's not how it works, guys.
Because they're done if they lose.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because, I mean, you know, because what will happen now, Minnesota should be able to reel off about two or three more wins, and that means by next week, you know, Minnesota then would be, you know, 9-4, and if they win that game, because remember, they don't have a big game until week 16 when they take on Green Bay, and so they should be able to reel off two more wins and get to 10, and then once they get to 10, that all but wipes out the Rams if they lose.
Guys that overlook other teams and get caught in a trap game are not in the NFL for very long. So, like Mora said, the wise Mora Dooley said, if you're not a good team and you're not a good player,
the wise Mora Dooley said, go Patriots.
Or coached by.
John, are you picking the Rams or the Seahawks here?
I picked the Seahawks because, again, I think at the moment they're the better team, but I have a pause because you worry about the fact that, just like you're thinking, a desperate team is going to try to put up its best effort, you know, and can they pull this off? I mean, you saw how close the first game was, 1 point. Now it's one where they are at home. They'll still have home field advantage to a certain degree, you know, and, you know, can they do it? But then the question is, if the Seahawks are able to get to Goff, stop the run, then they'll win. That's still an if until we see it.
All right, Clayton, as long as you play your best game down on the sidelines, don't overlook the Rams.
Yeah.
We're fine.
I'm not overlooking the Rams. Back when everybody was writing them off, I wasn't writing them off.
All right, the other big game, you're taking the Saints against the 49ers,
that
right?
Is correct, yes.
All right. You think it'll be close all the way? The Saints have two starting linebackers out.
Mm-hmm. Linebackers and their left guard, probably their best offensive lineman. But then, I mean, the 49ers, they're a little bit banged up. But I just look at the fact that the Saints are at home. You know, they're good with their pass rush, they're good with their defense, and they can take away the run. And if you can take away the run, then you take away a lot from the 49ers.
All right, let's have a look here.
John, I got a lie.
Are you looking at Kiko Alonso and A.J. Klein? Those are the linebackers you're talking about?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Professor, the Chiefs are getting 3 at New England. I can't believe it, John. They're giving the better team points here. What do you think?
I mean, the Chiefs are better than the...
Yes, I believe so,
yeah,
John.
Yeah, which is basically saying, and, you know, that's why you have to think, this is where the Patriots win. Because you know, because they're trying to. Because if they lose this game, they're probably going to end up being a third seed, And if they're going to be a third seed, they're not going to the Super Bowl. I mean, this is their desperation game, because now all of a sudden you start to almost get behind Kansas City. I mean, you're going to be behind Baltimore. And so they need this game desperately, and they're just so good at home.
John, what do you expect to happen with Dallas and Philadelphia? Who wants this division? Because neither team is playing like they want it. This is just, we've talked about how dreadful the division is. The Cowboys looked horrific last night. Mm-hmm. I know Jerry was less than pleased in his interview, and we're going to play some of that later. But who do you think wins it, and what do you see happening just in terms of head coaches?
Well, I mean, it's pretty clear that Jason Garrett, unless he wins two playoff games, and he has to make the playoffs to win the two playoff games, he's gone. I mean, there's no way that he's going to salvage his job. And, Doug Peterson, obviously, just 2 years away from being at the Super Bowl, he's not going to go anywhere. But it's just so bad. And, I mean, you saw how Philadelphia was. They're not very good. Yeah, they're good on defense. They can stop the run. They're pretty good at cornerback. They can rush the passer. But offensively, we can talk about how bad New England's receiving core is. That receiving core in New England is so much better than the Eagles, because, even the two guys who were injured in the Seattle game, Alshon Jeffries, I mean, right now I think he's up for Medicare, because, I mean, he looks so old and slow. And then Nelson Aguilar, who was a first-round pick, has been a bust. And so then you start to go to undrafted guys. It's brutal. And so I know just the talk on the sidelines in that game was that this is the worst Eagle wide receiving core in the last two decades.
All right, and John, I think we talked about this a little bit yesterday, but you think Buffalo is for real?
He said sort of.
They're number five rushing team. So, and the reason why I ask this is because, of course, they're hosting the Ravens, mm-hmm. and you look at Frank Gore. He's got what, 550 yards. Devin Singletary, you talk about a 1-2 punch. One has 553 yards. The other has 552 yards. And Josh Allen can run the ball, and that's one thing I think that number five run game that makes me think that they're for real and they could give the Ravens a shot here.
They could, and then there's some chance of bad weather, snow, and all that stuff, and that could slow the track down and make it a little bit tougher to get the running quarterback to run as well. That's going to affect the passing and all that stuff. I mean, they have a chance because if it's home, if it was down in Baltimore, I wouldn't give them much of a chance. I still look at Baltimore as being the Chicago Bears of last year, a team that took advantage of an easy schedule, had a defense that's not going to give up a lot of points, and was able to carve out a nice record against losing teams. Because remember, the only teams that they've played so far have been Tennessee, if you want to call them good, but they weren't good when they played Tennessee, and they beat Buffalo, beat Tennessee, and then they played New England, they lost to them. They were able to get the win over Dallas, which was a good win, but of course you see how bad Dallas is right now. So they're suspect because you don't know how good they are because they haven't played anybody. They have the easiest schedule in the National Football League. And easy schedules, sometimes we saw it with Jacksonville a couple years ago, even with Blake Bortles at quarterback, they ended up winning 12 games and going to the AFC Championship game. But, this is a solid team, but it's not a great team.
What's the line on that one, Jim?
Baltimore's favored by 6. Yeah. Professor, you mentioned Tennessee. Ryan Tannehill, ever since he joined the Titans, they lead the NFL in yards per play, 6.5 yards per play for Tennessee. They're at Oakland. They're favored by 3. Do you think they keep it going?
I do, yeah, because I think they're on a roll right now. Oakland's defense has just been destroyed in the last 2 weeks in some ways. I mean, maybe that Oakland run is starting to fall apart. But, no, I think – and Tannehill's – he's 5-1. He's won three comeback games, and so he's been fantastic. So, I give him a pretty good chance of winning that one.
Hey, John.
I was going to say really quick. Somebody had a fantasy football team and sat Dak Prescott and in favor of Ryan Tannehill.
I did that, John. I think Tannehill's going to have a good week against Oakland, don't you?
I do, yeah. I would certainly think so because, again, it's like that's a team right now that has a real good they're good. I mean, they're solid. So I think Tannehill will do a good job.
And Oakland fell off after a few good weeks there.
Mm-hmm, agreed.
Hey, John, I was looking at this story on ESPN.com where they're going through every coach in the NFL and putting them in four categories. You've got the hot seat, which is headed out if things don't turn around in the final four games. The warm seat, not safe if the season ends up a disappointment. The cool seat, safe, barring a total disaster. And then cold seat, no way he'll get fired. So those they've got on the hot seat, Dan Quinn, Jason Garrett, and Doug Marrone.
Mm-hmm.
Pat Shurmur is also on the hot seat, according to this article. And then the warm seat, they've got Freddie Kitchens, Matt Patricia, and Mike Zimmer. I'm surprised to see 8-4
no
Vikings
way on Zimmer. That one's wrong. I mean, hot seat on Freddie Kitchens and Matt Patricia. You know, I'd warm those things, two things up, and I'd put a an ice bag under Mike Zimmer. I mean, you know, he's going to make the playoffs most likely, and as a wild card, but he still has a chance to win the division. You're going to fire a coach that's going to win 11 games?
Yeah, I did. That was the one that stuck out. And then Kitchens a little bit only because he's in his first season. I thought perhaps there'd be some slack for that team. But do you think his seat is warm?
No, I think it's hot.
You think it's hot?
I think it's red hot.
Hmm.
I mean, you know, when you think about it, I mean, they're one of the worst coach teams in football.
Well, he's a hillbilly, according to Dave. That's why.
What's wrong with the hillbilly? I mean, you know, let's put it this way. I mean, you know, Jed did a good job on the Beverly Hillbillies.
He did.
All right. Go ahead, Jim.
I got one more for you. We got to get the Gardner Minshew question in here.
Oh, for the love of God.
I wish
God,
I'd asked my question.
No, it's Minshew mania. It's starting up again, John.
There's no mania.
Wait, let me set this up here. 2-4-8 teams, the Chargers with Phillip Rivers against Gardner Minshew and the 4-8 Jaguars. What do you think, John?
Well, of course, I mean, There's not much left on defense right now for Jacksonville because Jack is not going to be able to play this week. He's hurt, and you know they don't have much left in the secondary. I'd lean toward Rivers in this one because he's right now. I mean, if he loses, then I think he could be benched here in the next couple of weeks, and maybe that would end his career.
Also, he's more comfortable in the South.
Yes.
Well,
he is.
That accent and everything.
Yeah,
so.
He's playing down south.
Yeah.
Now, here, I'll ask you this, Dave Wyman.
Yes.
Is Philip Rivers a hillbilly?
No, I don't think so. He's a good father, and he's other.
What?
Things.
Now you're saying hillbillies aren't good fathers?
No, I'm not saying that, John.
Get him, Professor.
Just because A equals B,
get after him, John.
And B equals C, that doesn't mean that A equals C, okay?
Okay.
Right. There we go. John, you doing?
We'll see you down in L.A.
You doing your show tomorrow?
Yes, indeed, from 8 to 9.
All right, enjoy that. We will talk next week.
Okay, sounds good.
There he is, the Professor John Clayton, with us every day at 4. Right now, Jim is looking for his blanket. He's ready to curl up in front of Dave Wyman and stare at him longingly during story time, which is coming your way next with Bob, Dave, and more on 710 ESPN Seattle.